been wrong, or criticize the life of a con. What side of the lawn and the grass are you on? There's a path and a way, and we gotta show them. The Columbine strain is what we are growing. It's a shame we're too caught up to be knowing. Those whose self-esteem is low look down and judge the image of God's soul. When within him is God's hope, when will we see the kids reap what we sow? I said, time in the pen, turning boys to men. The world points at them time and again, and isolates them more. The choice is slim. Behind steel doors, there's a war within. Time in the pen conforms rebellious kids into felonious men. One of the government raised finest.
This is a previously recorded and re-aired My Science Project show, all about internet neutrality, an oldie but a goodie, and still incredibly relevant. I just got back from holiday, so apologies for the lack of a brand new show, but as I said, I think that you will enjoy this nonetheless. If you haven't heard it, then you haven't heard it, and it's new to you, and if you have, I still think you'll get a kick out of listening again. Greetings from Calgary. See you in a few more weeks. Anne is on in 2 more weeks.
5,000 years ago, people started to write. 600 years ago, people started to publish. 47 years ago, people started creating a network of computers.
It's fair to say that the two of us had the primary involvement in the creation of the internet's design.
Sending a message first to this computer, which would then store it and forward it onto this computer, thereby acting as a relay.
We found out that computers could talk to one another.
And only 15 years ago, Tim Berners-Lee invented the World Wide Web, an open platform of standards where anyone can create a website. And in this open platform, growth was explosive.
The internet is growing like an embryonic brain at a rate of 10% a month.
Bill Cameron has this report on the growing phenomenon of internet.
This summer, all the bulletin board software makers have announced products that will allow these little bulletin boards to become internet service providers.
It's all pure, clear, free, unregulated communication.
All the information you ever have encountered in your life would be linked together in this system across countries, across continents.
No middlemen. You produce it, you distribute it.
Welcome to the revolution.
Wake up, everybody. Stop sleeping. They want to charge more. Big companies are creeping into our internet. Internet's in distress. Let's answer the SOS.
I'm the internet. You're the internet. We're the internet. Now that's the internet. I like the internet. We love the internet. And I can prove it.
Some net fairy dust made me who I am. Living in an online neverland. The web's my playground, no suits allowed. Internet celebrities, let's sing it proud.
I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it.
I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it.
It's not my tights that cut off circulation. Big business wants to control the net nation. What you can see, how much you should pay. Tell me, is this the democratic way?
I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it.
I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it.
Charge more. Big companies are creeping into our internet. Internet's in distress. Let's answer the SOS. Keep it free and keep it open. Speak up or our World Wide Web will be broken.
Internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet.
I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it.
I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it. I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet, and I can prove it. I'm the internet, you're the internet, we're the internet, now that's the internet. I like the internet, we love the internet.
Zoom a little, zoom in a rocket ship. Off we go on a trip. Heading for the moon at a rocket clip. We're gonna zoom, zoom, rocket. Zoom a little, zoom, now we're almost free from the Earth's gravity. Zooming to the moon at terrific speed, because there is no friction. Soon we'll see if the moon is made out of green cheese. Ha, 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 ha. Zoom, we're here at the moon. Let's see what the moon is like.
Hi, everyone. You're listening to My Science Project on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. I'm your host, Julia. Today, we're going to be looking at a topic that's particularly critical right now for Canadians, and that topic is internet neutrality. Imagine that you want to surf the net. So you go to your homepage, which let's say you've set to be google.ca. But it's taking your homepage so long to load that you decide that instead of Googling that video on YouTube that you wanted to see, you'll just go to YouTube itself. Maybe there's a problem with Google. So you type in the URL for YouTube, and there you are. You go and you find the video you want to see after maybe a few more minutes than you expected of loading up. And you go to play the video, but it's taking so long to stream that you're just frustrated. And you think, well, forget this. You'll just go to iTunes and download some music for your MP3 player. Now, you start the download, but it's taking so many minutes that you just get incredibly frustrated. And you decide, forget this. You'll listen to some radio over the internet instead. So you go to CITR.ca to stream a live broadcast in real time. But once you click on the stream, it's just so fragmented and disjointed that it makes the entire endeavor pointless. So you think, okay, fine. Entertainment media is not working. Go to amnesty.ca. Check out some socio-political interest issues. But again, that website is so hard to access that you just give up because it's not coming up either, and you end up turning your computer off completely and calling it a day. Now, this might seem like a hyperbolic scenario, but it's actually much closer to what we could experience here in Canada than I think any of us would like to think. And this is because of something called internet neutrality. At the top of the show, we heard a clip that is an open source documentary called Human Lobotomy, hosted on a Canadian website dedicated to battling for net neutrality. And that's www.neutrality.ca. And after that clip, we heard a song that is being hosted on an American website called WeAreTheWeb.org. And that is a website that was put together by three internet celebrities, Leslie Hall, who deems herself Keeper of the Gems, Tron Guy, and Peter Pan, all three of whom you can Google to find out more, or you can go to the WeAreTheWeb.org website to find out about this. And internet neutrality is a huge issue in the States, and it's been debated openly and vehemently for many, many months now. But it's a problem in Canada that we are not discussing this nearly as openly as we should be. So what is internet neutrality, you ask? Essentially, having a neutral internet is what we have now. The ability to access any content we want, whether it's uploading or downloading information, when we want to, at the speed we want to, which is basically the fastest speed possible. So if you pay for broadband, you're going to have a quick connection, you're going to have quick download and upload speed, as you like. The problem that's coming up here is where the telecommunications companies, who for the most part are our internet service providers, or ISPs, have decided that it's not enough that we should pay them to have an internet service. So you choose your speed, right? You choose a slower speed or high broadband speed, and you pay whatever Canadian company, however much they're asking for. It's at your discretion, to a large part. But what they want to do now, these ISPs, is charge not just you for accessing the internet. They want to charge you for accessing certain websites. And then they also want to charge the people who are creating these websites for you. So essentially they're charging almost three times. Once for the access, the speed that you want. Second, for specific access to specific sites. And third, to the people who are providing this content. And that could even be you. If you host your own personal website, or if you have a company, this includes you being charged for this essentially third time. Now, on the neutrality.ca website, they talk about several issues that are really pertinent to this debate on net neutrality and how it might be compromised by these ISPs. One of these is called quality of service, which is described often by these companies as a premium level or tier of service that can be purchased for a price. This is in effect like saying, well, if you can pay a private doctor to do knee surgery on you next week, why should you wait several months to do it through the public health care system? It's like, well, if you can afford to pay to get quicker access to a website, hey, why not? But the problem with this is that it makes it challenging for people who either don't want to or can't pay an extra fee to then access the other services, to access these services equally. Quality of service also endangers internet protocols. For example, if you want to do voice over internet protocol or VoIP, something that Anne discussed on My Science Project a few months ago, it can screw these things up because what it does is it is deliberately restricting the speed at which packets of information are getting to your computer. So instead of just letting the net go as it goes, and if there's a bit of congestion, that's how it is, it's deliberately timing things, and if you pay more, you get things faster, which then in effect creates more internet congestion for those people who are not necessarily paying this premium fee. Another problem is discrimination of access, right? I mean, that's at the crux of internet neutrality. Internet service providers want to decide what you can and can't access, and if you really want to access it, well, you're just going to have to pay to do it. Whether your message is entertainment, whether it's socio-political commentary, essentially, the mandate of the internet service providers is going to dictate exactly what you have access to. And this is not just an abstract thing. In fact, in 2005, when TELUS workers were striking, TELUS blocked customers from visiting a website that was sympathetic to the telecommunications workers' union. And that's just one example of how an ISP, even thus far, has flexed its muscle to restrict what you as a customer are paying to see and want to see. Another problem that's listed on the neutrality.ca website is that net neutrality is asking for a distinction to be made between the business of publishing content and that of providing it. And this is maybe a poor analogy, but it's sort of like a librarian restricting which books you can take out of the library. They're meant to be there to take your card, make sure it's valid, scan it, and tell you when the book is due back. But instead, these ISPs have decided that it's more lucrative for them to sell you the concept that they're going to decide what you can and can't see. Another problem that telecommunications companies are saying is a good reason for them to be charging not just the consumer, but also the people who are hosting web pages, is they argue that companies like Amazon are getting a free ride because they're making money off the internet, which the telecommunications companies are giving everyone access to because, hey, they lay the cables. They set up that electronic infrastructure, the hardware, to get you internet access. But that argument falls really short when you consider that Amazon also needs to access the internet. All people who do business on the internet are customers, right? We all have to subscribe to internet access through an internet service provider. So no one's getting a free ride, and no one's being an exception. Everyone's paying in, whether you're providing content or looking at content or doing both, as many people do. The last problem I'll touch on, again from neutrality.ca, is the idea of fair competition. And it boils down again to internet service providers deciding which sites are going to load quickly and which are going to load more slowly. And that's not arbitrary. That's actually them physically putting constraints on the speed at which you can access internet content and saying that if you want to access something more quickly, let's say something from a competitor, then you're going to have to pay more. And, you know, isn't that fair for them? I was really fortunate for today's show to get interviews with two Canadians who have different expertise and experience with the internet. The first is a professor at the University of Ottawa named Michael Geist, and he's an expert in internet law. And often if you're going to read interviews with experts on net neutrality, Michael Geist will make an appearance more often than not. The other person that I have an interview with is named Jeff LaPere, who is a Canadian heavily involved, who's a writer, director, and actor of Pure Ownage, which is a fictional documentary about an amateur pro gamer located in Toronto. So we're going to get perspectives from people who have different experiences with the internet and who bring a lot to the table in terms of how important the internet is to us as Canadians in Canada and also internationally. I recorded these interviews back in the fall of 2006, but the content is as relevant now as it was then. The last thing that we'll talk about in this show is what we can all do as consumers, as internet users, to ensure that we have and retain a neutral internet in Canada. And as I said at the top of the show, this is a subject that's getting far too little attention for the impact that it can have on our lives. And again, if you go back to that scenario of not being able to view content, whether it's for kicks, whether it's for more serious matters, making political points, statements, doing business, making money, or educating yourself, I think it becomes very clear very quickly how important it is to be able to connect to the internet and have nobody telling you what you can and cannot see, particularly in a country that deems itself a democratic one. If you want to contact myself about this matter or anything else that we talk about on My Science Project or my co-host Anne, then you can email either of us at myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. So, without further ado, here's my interview with Michael Geist. I'm speaking with Michael Geist, who's the Canada Research Chair of Internet and E-commerce Law at the University of Ottawa. Michael is also a contributor to media outlets that include the CBC, the Toronto Star, and the Ottawa Citizen. He has served on Canada's National Task Force on Spam and is the founder of the Canadian Internet Policy and Public Interest Clinic, which is the leading public interest technology law clinic in Canada. Michael, welcome to My Science Project.
Well, thanks for having me.
The topic of this show is internet neutrality, and net neutrality is something that's been given a lot of attention in the United States for the past several months. And there's a lot of high-profile activity going on, particularly on the internet, to maintain net neutrality and prevent legislation that would threaten net neutrality. And I wonder, with your expertise, if you could comment on what's going on in Canada with respect to internet neutrality, the threats to it, and any kind of positive activity that's going on to preserve net neutrality in our country.
Sure. It's a great question. It's an issue that certainly has generated a huge amount of attention, as you suggest, in the United States. And in fact, the legislative discussion in the U.S. works both ways. So there are those who are seeking legislation to preserve net neutrality, and then those who are opposing that kind of legislation and seeking to essentially create a two-tier, even more, internet. At the heart of the issue is the question of whether or not carriers, large internet service providers, should be entitled to discriminate between different kinds of content, different kinds of applications on the internet. And there's a great desire, certainly among some U.S. providers, and increasingly it would appear from Canadian providers as well, to be able to do just that. So they envision the prospect of building out ever faster internet networks that would be made available to consumers, but then charging people who put content on those networks for the ability to go in the fast lane. And so a typical example that has actually been raised by some of the carriers themselves in the United States is the potential to charge an Amazon or a Google if they want the results when someone tries to access those sites on the faster networks. So otherwise, they might be consigned to the slower lane. And of course, the impact of that would be that while the very large players might be in a position to pay, for many smaller, medium-sized businesses, for individuals looking to speak out, they might be invariably consigned to this slower lane, and people would gradually drift away from that kind of content in favor of the stuff that arrives in their on their computer screens and in their inboxes far faster. And so advocates of net neutrality legislation have suggested that the amazing development of the Internet over the last 10 years has been due at least in part to the fact that we've treated all the content, all the applications in an equal fashion. And given that there is a real prospect for change in that regard, that the carriers themselves want to start charging for different speeds, not for the consumers, but rather for the people who put their content online and make it available, that we need some kind of protection. It's ultimately consumer protection legislation that would protect the public from carriers who might want to engage in that kind of activity.
So we're saying that not only are the Internet service providers wanting to charge the people who have the sites themselves, but they also want to charge the consumers, so it's a double-end fee?
Well, they already, of course, charge consumers, and consumers are in a position to pay for a different speed. You can buy dial-up, you can buy fast Internet speeds. There are some providers that provide a slower broadband, always-on connection. So they already do, in a sense, discriminate amongst different speeds from a consumer perspective. But the one thing that is treated equally is the fact that no matter what you try to access as a consumer, whether it's Google or something on YouTube or email or just virtually any kind of content, it's all treated in a similar fashion. It's, you know, the extent to which there's bits available so it can transmit that information, it'll arrive to you as fast as possible. The carriers envision the potential to discriminate, in a sense, amongst those bits, charging people who want to ensure that their bits move very, very fast, and then those who refuse to pay being consigned to less bandwidth and thus slower speeds when it comes time to consumers trying to access their sites.
Do you actually see in the future that if net neutrality is compromised, that consumers might be charged extra fees to access certain websites?
Well, there's certainly a line of argument that would suggest that consumers will pay at the end of the day, regardless, right? So that if the Amazons of the world do decide to pay because ultimately they're faced with no other alternative in their view, consumers are ultimately going to pay for this because the costs are obviously going to be passed along to them at some point in time. So consumers certainly pay for different speeds, and there is certainly the prospect that if vendors or websites were forced to pay these sorts of fees, that at some point in time they would look for ways to pass that along to consumers as well.
So consumers are going to suffer not only in choice and accessibility, but they're ultimately going to suffer in the pocket.
Well, they're going to suffer in their pocketbook, but I think unquestionably, but I think the real danger here actually goes beyond some of the additional costs, because it becomes a fundamental issue of innovation and free speech, because so much of the growth that we've seen on the Internet are smaller companies or individuals who are out there blogging who find an audience, or someone who posts something online. We've seen in recent weeks the incident at UCLA where a student was tasered in a school library, and that was posted on YouTube and had a real impact on what was going on. Similarly, the Michael Richards from Kramer fame, and now more famous for uttering an incredible line of profanity at a comedy club, also posted online and made available to all sorts of people. The growth of that kind of content, you know, bottoms up, user-generated content, smaller businesses, smaller websites being able to compete with some of the bigger players, is really dependent on a net-neutral approach, because they simply can't compete with the large broadcasters, the large networks, or the large e-commerce companies if they're forced to pay. So what we're really trying to preserve here is a level playing field, the prospect that the next YouTube and the next Google and the next blogger that we haven't even heard of yet can come to the fore by virtue of the fact that their content is treated in the same fashion as any other content online.
And I suppose it's not just for entertainment purposes, although the creativity of the Internet is one of the things that makes it the most special. But, for example, there was the blogger, I believe, in Iraq who was posting all sorts of news items. And so it's not simply just for fun. It's also getting information out there that we normally wouldn't have access to.
Oh, that's unquestionably the case. We've seen such an enormous amount of, frankly, incredible content from citizen journalists who are posting all sorts of very important stuff, often perspectives that we might not otherwise have access to, video that simply wouldn't have seen the light of day but for the fact that today someone may have been out there with a cell phone camera and managed to take some pictures or take some video and then have the avenues with which they could post that content online. That kind of speech and that kind of interactivity is, I think, crucially important. And there is a real danger that if we don't ensure that carriers treat all content neutral, that they'll have some real incentives to buy some of their own content. For example, you're a large ISP that also happens to own a stake in a broadcasting company. You ensure that your own broadcasting your own broadcaster's material gets through far faster than the competition, whether that's other broadcasters or individuals who are seeking to post their stuff as well.
And I suppose that's a good segue into what's going on in Canada in terms of Canadian telecommunications companies biasing what their internet users can access. And I wonder if you could comment on that a little bit.
Sure. So we've seen a number of had a number of examples where the various Canadian carriers have engaged in different kinds of activity that would might well be described as discriminating between different kinds of content. And it ranges from the one end to the almost now infamous instance involving TELUS, where they blocked access to a website that was supportive of a union during a time when there was a labor dispute with this union, and in fact not only blocked access to that site, but about 600 other sites that were hosted on the same IP address, and so they engage in very clear content blocking. We've had Shaw offer up the prospect of a premium surcharge for people who want to use internet telephony, arguing that this $10 surcharge would result in a higher quality of service, although many people were very skeptical about that, and there was the potential that they might remove that fee for their own service but keep it in place for some of the competitor services. We've had another one of the large cable companies, Rogers, acknowledge that they engage in bit shaping or traffic shaping, whereby they provide less bandwidth for certain kinds of applications. So applications, particularly peer-to-peer applications, such as BitTorrent and the like, receive far less bandwidth, and thus people trying to download things using BitTorrent, and BitTorrent being used not just for copyright infringing purposes, but as an increasingly important mechanism to distribute video by people who create different kinds of video, filmmakers, software developers trying to release their software product using torrents. And so that content was having a hard time getting through to end users because there was a diminishing amount of bandwidth being made available for those applications. And then I suppose most recently we had Videotron, another large cable outfit based out of Quebec, arguing that they'd actually like to see a tax or a tariff placed on content creators for enjoying the benefit of having their content transmitted on carriers' networks. So there's no question but that virtually all the major carriers in Canada have had incidents over the last year or two that really raise concerns that they'd like to engage in different kinds of discrimination between content and suggest that we in Canada really do need some net neutrality legislation.
Now, I understand that in the U.S. they recently had a setback with the net neutrality legislation. It leads to what happens in Canada, because often what is made policy in the U.S., people say that's what happens in this country too. So I wonder if you could talk about what's going on in terms of Canadian legislation to do with net neutrality here.
Right. Well, there isn't any legislation on the table right now. But there is an opportunity to see something happen, because the current industry minister, Maxime Bernier, who is very involved on telecom reform, in fact, it would appear that he's made that his biggest priority, is looking to reshape how we regulate telecommunications in Canada. And while his emphasis has been on deregulation, the prospect of providing less regulation over telecom in Canada, it seems to me that also does open the door to addressing these sorts of issues as well. And in fact, earlier this year, there was a major report released that reviewed Canadian telecommunications law, 400-page report, that acknowledged the benefits certainly of some deregulation, but also provided specific notice to the net neutrality issue as well.
So is it looking good for net neutrality in Canada?
Well, not really. Certainly not in the sense that we have any legislation, and this is certainly not a priority of the current government. But I do think it's an issue that the Canadian public not only ought to be aware of, but also needs to make a real effort to ensure that if we do move forward on reform, that at the same time as we deregulate, we ensure we balance that out with the appropriate kind of regulation to guard against the kinds of concerns raised through by the net neutrality debate.
Now, in Canada, we're pretty limited in our choice of internet service providers or ISPs. Other countries such as the UK have a lot more choice and perhaps aren't so threatened by problems with net neutrality, compromised net neutrality, because they can simply switch internet service providers. I mean, is that one of the key issues for a country such as ours or even for the US, that market competition is a big factor?
Right, unquestionably. If we were in a fully competitive market at a consumer level, then I think that much of the need for net neutrality legislation probably goes away. Because if you had, as a consumer, a choice of large number of providers for your high-speed internet service, if one decided to engage in the kind of discrimination we've been talking about, it would be relatively easy to simply flip to somebody else. But, of course, that's not the case. Most Canadians have, to the extent to which they have options for high-speed internet access, they're typically choosing between either cable or telephone. And so that's a choice of one or the other. And the two services tend to offer roughly the same sort of thing and tend to seemingly move in lockstep. So as one changes, the other changes. So we're not in a very competitive environment, at least from a consumer perspective. And the same would be true in the United States. And I think that's why it's our two countries that have really felt this net neutrality issue the strongest.
And I suppose it's not going to be rectified anytime soon because those companies own the cables through which all the bits are going.
Well, sure. I mean, that's the danger, and that's why there is a necessity, I think, for government to step in and guard against abuse of those systems. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that, you know, the carriers that have these networks, sure, they've invested huge amounts of money in it, but they've done so within a publicly regulated environment whereby we recognize that there's great value being turned over to these carriers, great benefits to them, great benefits to society, and along with those benefits come some obligations as well.
Do you think that it should actually become government run?
No, I think that, you know, we benefit certainly still from ensuring that, you know, the private sector leads in this area. But at the same time, we need to set, you know, appropriate ground rules. And some of those ground rules obviously are to guard against discrimination. At the same time, I think that there is a role to play, certainly for public bodies to consider the extent to which they might get involved in providing some kind of internet service, perhaps not the same kind of broadband services we're talking about here, but certainly the municipal Wi-Fi initiatives, where an increasing number of cities and municipalities are looking to provide access to the internet through wireless connectivity, almost in a utility-style model, I think has the potential to have some real benefits to society and ensure more access than perhaps we have today.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting. So we've been talking about Canadians becoming involved with net neutrality and being aware of what's going on potentially with legislation in our country. And I wonder if you could suggest ways in which people could be proactive and work to maintain net neutrality.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's always it's always a challenge. How do you start influencing some policy? I think the starting point is that politics is local, and an easy thing to do, but a critically important thing to do, is write to the people's local MPs, copy the minister and the CRTC if you can at the same time, and make sure that they're aware that this is an issue that people are tracking and have concern with, and ask what they intend to try to do about it. That, I think, is particularly touching on local MPs, because many of them will not even be aware of this issue, is something important, and to get them engaged on this issue as much as possible. At the same time, if you are a customer of some of the providers that we've just been talking about, it's worth telling them that you're concerned about these sorts of things and letting them know that, you know, if they do engage in different kinds of discrimination, you won't hesitate as a consumer to look for alternatives.
Thank you, Michael, for joining me today and talking about this.
It's my pleasure.
So you want to gain the Freshman 15? Well, you probably will. So why not gain it ethically? Sprouts. The student-run, not-for-profit grocery store is now open in the lower level of the UBC Student Union Building across from Travel Cuts in the Wellness Center. Sprouts is committed to providing the UBC community with healthy, locally produced, organic, and fair trade products at great prices. Sprouts will be open from 9:30 to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday. So you want to tag a ride on the sustainable gravy train? Sprouts is now looking for volunteers to help out with tabling, outreach, and at the storefront. So just drop by and pick up your application.
You're listening to a previously recorded and previously aired edition of My Science Project on CITR 101.9 FM. My co-host, Anne, will be back with you live in 2 weeks' time.
Think I'm just too white and nerdy. Can't you see I'm white and nerdy? Look at me, I'm white and nerdy. I wanna roll with the gangsters. So far they all think I'm too white and nerdy. Think I'm just too white and nerdy. Think I'm just
just too white and nerdy.
I'm just too white and nerdy.
Pretty, really white and nerdy.
At MIT, got skills, I'm a champion of D&D. MC Escher, that's my favorite MC. Keep your 40 out, just have an Earl Grey tea. My rims never spin, to the contrary, you'll find that they're quite stationary. All of my action figures are cherry, Stephen Hawking's in my library. My MySpace page is all totally pimped out, got people begging for my top 8 spaces. Yo, I know pie to a thousand places, ain't got no grill, but I still wear braces. I order all of my sandwiches with mayonnaise. I'm a whiz, a minesweeper, I can play for days. Once you see my sweet moves, you're gonna stay amazed. My favorite move is old bounce, I set the place ablaze. There's no killer app I haven't run, at Pascal, well I'm number one. Dude, that's calculus just for fun. I ain't got a gap, but I got a soldering gun. Happy Days is my favorite theme song. I can sure kick your butt in a game of ping pong. I'll ace any trivia quiz you bring on. I'm fluent in JavaScript as well as Claymon.
R-I-C-O. You see me roll on my Segway. I know in my heart they think I'm white and nerdy.
Think I'm just too white and nerdy.
Think I'm just too white and nerdy.
Can't you see I'm white and nerdy?
Look at me, I'm white and nerdy. I like to roll with the gangsters. Although it's apparent I'm too white and nerdy.
Think I'm just too white and nerdy.
Think I'm just too white and nerdy.
I'm just too white and nerdy.
How'd I get so white and nerdy?
I've been browsing, inspecting, X-Men comics. You know I collect them. The pens in my pocket, I must protect them. My ergonomic keyboard never leaves me bored. Shopping online for deals on some writable media. I edit Wikipedia. I remember my Holy Grail really well. I can recite it right now. And have you R-O-T-F-L-O-L. I got a business on a website. Well, my friends need some code. Who do they call? I do HTML for them all. Even made a homepage for my doll. Yo, I got myself a fanny pack. They were having a sale down at the Gap. In my nights with a roll of bubble wrap. Pop, pop, hope no one sees me getting freaky.
I'm nerdy in the extreme and whiter than sour cream.
I was in AV club and glee club and even the chess team. Only question I ever thought was hard. What do I like, Kirk, or do I like Picard?
Spend every weekend at the Renaissance Fair. Got my name on my underwear. They see me strolling, they laughing, and rolling their eyes because I'm so white and nerdy.
Just because I'm white and nerdy.
Just because I'm white and nerdy.
All because I'm white and nerdy.
Holy cow, I'm white and nerdy. I wanna bowl with the gangsters. But oh well, it's obvious I'm white and nerdy.
Think I'm just too white and nerdy.
Think I'm just too white and nerdy.
I'm just too white and nerdy.
Look at me, I'm white and nerdy.
Wait, what? The internet is at stake? How could something so firmly planted in reality disappear?
And we're back to my science project on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Julia. We just heard Weird Al Yankovic's White and Nerdy. The show today is all about net neutrality, keeping the internet free and open and uncompromised for Canadians so that we can have access to whatever content we want anywhere in the world without paying an arm and a leg to do it. This is my interview with Jeff LaPere, who is a writer, director, and actor of Pure Ownage, an online fictional documentary.
I'm speaking with Jeff LaPere, who is one of the writers, the director, and an actor in the internet show Pure Ownage, which was established in 2004, so not that long ago. And Pure Ownage is a Canadian production that's amassed quite a big and devoted following in the last couple of years. Jeff, welcome to my science project.
Thank you.
So I brought Jeff on the show to get a perspective from someone who actually relies on a free and open internet to communicate their creative productions to all the rest of us who use the internet on a regular basis and enjoy this kind of creative production. And so I guess before we get into the impact of net neutrality on this kind of work, Jeff, could you tell us a bit about Pure Ownage?
Well, it's a project that I started with a good friend of mine, Jarrett Kale, back in 2004. And we just started making funny videos, and we put them on the internet. And the videos had to do with a video game that we were playing at the time that we were really into. And so we ended up expanding the show to be sort of this mockumentary about video games and internet culture. And the first episode we put online, we had a few hundred people watch it, and the second episode we had a few thousand people watch it, and it went from there, and our audience sort of virally grew into what is now about 3 million regular viewers. So we've got this show online that is made pretty much from Canon XL2 digital camera and home computer equipment and a home recording studio. And it's one of the most watched shows that are produced in Canada.
No, that's quite phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And even actually in light of television viewing, I mean, that viewership has dropped significantly in the last few years. And to have 3 million people watching your show online is an achievement.
Yeah, definitely, especially considering our demographic. We had a user survey, surveyed our viewers and asked them about their age and level of education and how much they spend on gaming and all this stuff. And it turns out that most of our audience is the 15 to 25-year-old age range, which is something that, which is a range of people that don't watch television as far as standard broadcasters are concerned. This is a demographic that is spending more time on the internet, more time playing video games, but you know, in doing anything other than watching the bland content that's on TV nowadays.
So I mean, that's significant in that with a free and open internet, people of a demographic that wouldn't normally be exposed to certain content are exposed to it. And that could be used for all sorts of different communication purposes.
Definitely. You know, the biggest part about net neutrality and our project is that, especially in Canada, it's really difficult to get into the entertainment industry. The barriers of entry are very, very high. Now with the internet, you can be your own broadcaster. You don't need huge infrastructure. You don't need to have had the Telefilm stamp of approval to get your project going. You can just go ahead and shoot it, edit it up, put it on the internet, and you can advertise or you can grow your audience virally. You can promote your own projects, and people can view it on their home PC. A lot of people are watching television on their home PC now or through media centers. So this is a way of bypassing the traditional broadcasters. And what it costs us for the infrastructure for broadcasting our show to 3 million people is only $60 a month. That's all that it costs. So it's, you know, that's a very, very low barrier to entry in terms of being your own broadcaster on the internet.
Yeah, that's really phenomenal. I was going to ask you about that. Thanks for mentioning it. Just how, what the ease was of getting Puronage up and on the internet, and what server do you use to do that?
There's a company in Seattle called speakeasy.net that have unlimited bandwidth packages. So, but of course, you know, when we have a new episode release, our traffic is crazy, and we wouldn't be able to get the episode out to all the people on the first day that wanted on the first day if it weren't for technologies like BitTorrent. We put up a torrent and we seed from one computer. So this has nothing to do with our actual web host, just our own computer in our home. And you can have the 60 or 100,000 people that want the episode on the first day downloading it, and they can all get it within an hour. So this is sort of funny that what most broadcasters think as being something that's bad for their business, BitTorrent and file sharing, this is something that is absolutely essential for our business. We're sort of doing something a little different in the entertainment industry. We're giving our show away for free. Anybody can watch it for free on the internet. And we generate an income through merchandising and hopefully advertising in the near future. But the production of our show is entirely supported by, or almost entirely supported by, T-shirt sales.
And you had an interesting experience on eBay earlier this year, didn't you?
Yes, we had some of Jeremy's hair for sale.
And Jeremy is played by Jarrett Kale, correct? He's the main gamer in Puronage.
Yeah, he's the head writer, and he's the lead actor in the show, and an amazing gamer, much like his character.
Of course.
But we were always kicking ourselves because we're the most famous people with the least money, right? So if you look at our fame to money ratio, so we thought, well, you know, we got to be able to generate some income from the notoriety on the internet. So we had an eBay auction, and it was actually part of episode 10, one of our episodes. We had discussed selling Jeremy's hair on the internet to see how much money we could get, and so we actually did that in real life on eBay, and the bidding went up to I think it was $4,200 was the winning bid.
And I understand that you put that money to good use, all for the fans.
Yes, we spent it on the show. We spent it traveling and buying equipment. So all of the money that comes in, we dump back into the show, and I think the production quality has increased a lot throughout the episodes as a result. So it's great that the fans are seeing their support being put directly to good use.
Absolutely. And I suppose the key question is, if Internet service providers decided to charge certain people fees for the bandwidth that they would occupy in terms of downloads and user accessibility, how would that affect you guys and people like you guys who are doing this broadcasting on the Internet?
I have a feeling that we might be able to find a way around it, but it certainly, if that was the case, that we would be charged for the amount of bandwidth we are used, or anybody is charged, or there's a two-tiered Internet, certainly it would be very, very detrimental for our business, and which I think is terrible, considering that we see a lot of great talent emerging that we would have never seen had there been those large barriers to entry. Another example of a great Internet show is Tiki Bar TV. It's done by some people in Vancouver, and it's very popular on iTunes. They do three to five minute segments, and the guy shoots it all in his apartment in Vancouver, and it's great content, and you wouldn't be able to find that kind of content on television, certainly.
Would you have even been able to get Pureonage broadcast if there had been these fees, like with episode one at the very beginning? Do you think you could have done it?
No, I don't think there's any possibility, because we wouldn't have the support of users spending their own money to torrent something that they've never seen or never watched. We also lowered the bandwidth. We started with the show. We literally had no budget. The first two episodes were shot on a camera that was borrowed from a University of Toronto library. So it was literally the cost of the tapes and their own time that went into to the show. For the first four episodes, we weren't generating an income from it, so it wasn't a business. It was more of a hobby. And there's no way that we would have got that far without having some capital. In fact, I wasn't even in the entertainment industry at the time. I was working as a physicist at the University of Toronto, so this was
brilliant.
My hobby.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So, I definitely would not be in the entertainment industry if it were not for the Internet, for the, cheap, accessible, good quality digital video equipment and everything that goes along with making the show. It's really just a matter of technology that has allowed us to reach our audience directly and bypass any sort of situation where we have to convince a room full of people that our show is good or worth broadcasting or anything like that. We just put it out ourselves, and our audience grew on its own.
So in addition to creating what is really quite a hilarious show, and actually, do you want to give the website so that listeners can check it out for themselves if they haven't already?
Sure, that's pureonage.com. So it's spelled the gamer way, P-U-R-E-P-W-M-A-G-E. .com. So most people would pronounce it pure pwnage if they're nudes.
Yeah, of course, which we're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a fantastic website. You've set it up really well. You can, as you say, you can get swag from it. You can watch, there's 12 episodes in total, and the 12th was released last month, I think?
Yep, I think just under a month ago. And I think we've got the numbers for downloads as of last week was 1.6 million downloaded from our Mirror site, and we have about a quarter of a million views on the Brightcove stream.
It's terrific. So in addition to, all these people enjoying what you guys are making and laughing at it, because it's really very clever and very witty, what are the other benefits of doing this show in terms of your career development, in terms of Canadian culture, in terms of the development of Canadian filmmakers and actors and producers? What's your take on all of that? What would happen if we had a compromised internet and it wasn't free and open?
Well, most of our audience is an international audience. 42% of our viewers in the United States. I think we have 10% in the UK, 10% in Australia, et cetera, it goes down from there. But most of our audiences are not Canadians. So Pureonage is actually a huge cultural export, and this is one of the mandates of Telefilm is to foster Canadian cultural development through film and other media. And it's funny that Telefilm actually has no support for this. They are I've spoken to some people, and they are in the process of changing their policies so that they can give money to projects like ours. But if you're not on television, then you don't have access to the funding that is really the backbone of the Canadian television and film industry. So really, we're on our own, and we need cheap internet. We need net neutrality in order to get started, in order to function currently as a business. Otherwise, it would be completely unfeasible.
I think that's phenomenal that most of your viewership is outside of Canada. Do you have any idea where that is?
Well, it's pretty much people watch our show wherever people play video games. There's nothing, there's also no borders on the internet, right?
Yeah,
we've also tried to get more of an international audience subtitles. We have subtitles in over 15 different languages on the website, so we can maximize our audience. But it's really an amazing thing to think that when we started out, we sort of grew our audience equally in every country because, of course, there's no borders on the internet. So,
well, not yet, at least.
We didn't have this phenomenon of having to break into the States or anything like that, like the Tragically Hip and the Bare Naked Ladies. I think the Bare Naked Ladies did a better job of breaking into the States, but there was never that cultural border. We were never labeled as Canadians or being Canadian content. We never started broadcasting only in Canada and then went out from there. It was just everywhere all at once, and we just grew our audience everywhere all at once.
I guess my last question for you is, do you hear much talk about net neutrality in your circles? Are people expressing concern? Are people doing something to make sure that the legislature that is trying to be passed in the United States to make the internet non-neutral doesn't happen to us here in Canada?
Well, to tell you the truth, I haven't been politically active at all, I don't think people that I interact with on this project have either. But we do get a lot of email from fans saying they're concerned. More so than us, we should be more concerned. But we get a lot of email from saying, "Why are we fine with this issue?"
I got high last night.
It's happened, and they're all worried because they like the free content that they can't find anywhere else except on the internet.
I wonder if it would be a valuable exercise to solicit the support from your international viewers. I mean, if MLA's got all these letters from people around the world saying how great your show is and how important net neutrality is, I wonder if that would have an impact.
Yeah, I just hope that those that are debating this issue, those that are the lawmakers, are aware of projects like ours. They may not be.
No, I don't think they are, actually. And in fact, I think a lot of people in positions of influence don't even know about net neutrality and the ongoing issue, which is pretty worrying, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining me and for talking about this issue. And good luck with episode. Well, I guess it's going to be episode 1 of season 2 that will be coming
out. That's right, yeah.
When is that going to be released online?
Well, we're not sure. We're aiming for March 2007, but we've got a lot of work to do still on the DVDs and the soundtrack. We're going to start selling those in the Noob Store before then. So we got to finish up season 1 first, and then we'll get on to producing more content.
Excellent. And I should say that the writing of the songs is just as witty and funny as the writing of the actual episodes.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's really well done. I'm a big fan. So thanks very much, Jeff. It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Gonna like toy like on you noobs, 'cause I own you, like I own you like pretty hard and stuff right. I'm gonna give you some spanks, just like you're like Kyle, and you suck ass at all the games you try to play. 'Cause I own you, I own you like pretty hard stuff, right? Nice, own you, I own you like you're like somebody's mom trying to play the games.
light on you. Is that on? I don't think. I will own you sometime. Maybe when we play the game. Noobs, I just like kind of want to let you know that like I totally like own like you. And you know, you may think that like maybe one day, like maybe I won't like anymore, but that's wrong. I'm always gonna own you, cause I'm the owner. It's just what I do. Own you like pretty hard stuff, right? Oh, you want some of that? You're someone's mom. Oh, you're begging for the mercy now. I'm gonna give you some spanks. Cause you're a total noob and you'll suck ass at every game you try to play. I own all.
And I should add that the first episode of Season 2 of Pure Ownage will premiere at its worldwide premiere in Toronto at the Bloor Cinema on April 14th, 2007. And then it's also going to make its way to Vancouver and to Calgary. And it's in Vancouver on April 24th. So you can go to the Pure Ownage website and you can check out exactly what the venue is for the Vancouver showing of Episode 1 for Season 2. A recent update in terms of internet neutrality in Canada was posted on the Canadian Press in early February of this year, and it said that Industry Minister Maxime Bernier is still unsure about how much the internet needs protection in Canada. And for example, telecommunications companies like Videotron and TELUS are still pushing against net neutrality legislation. And this legislation would stop companies to pay these telecom giants to have their pages load faster than others, for example. Okay, so what can we do to ensure that we keep the internet neutral in Canada? I think it boils down to being heard and to bringing attention to our MPs and the people who represent us and assess these bills. In my interview with Michael Geist, we talked about the need to express how important this issue is to the people who we vote into office so that they can hopefully react according to our views and our needs on this issue. So how can you do this? Well, there are different ways that you can, and they're all good, and probably the more that you do, the more effective it is. One is to just write your MP, and a really easy way to find out who your MP actually is to Google them. If you Google Canadian Members of Parliament, or if you Google Canadian MPS, as in MPs, you'll go to the Government of Canada directory. You can probably Google that too, Government of Canada directory. And then you get a page with all these contact details for contacting your representatives. High up on that page is Members of Parliament, or MPs. So you can find your MP by using your postal code. So you just click on that link. Or if you know the name of your MP but you don't know their contact details, you can click on the link just below that and find your MP by name. And if you really want, you can even write your members of the Senate, and there's a link there on that page to give you the information for who to write your letter to. What is it, the old adage, one letter is like the opinion of at least 10 people? So the more documented stuff in writing that there is and that we send in, the more strong of a message our message will be. The other ways that you can support a neutral internet in Canada is to visit neutrality.ca, www.neutrality.ca, which is the Canadian net neutrality website. There's an online petition, and there are also ideas and suggestions and contact information on that website for getting in touch with people who can make a difference in terms of legislation to keep the internet neutral and to keep access free for everyone and equal for everyone. And lastly, what you can do is you can actually write your internet service providers. In Canada, this includes TELUS, Shaw, and Rogers. And you can tell them that a free and neutral internet is important to you. And you can say that if they insist on starting to levy special fees for selective access to internet sites, that you'll simply stop doing business with them. I know in Canada, one of our major challenges is a lack of consumer choice and a lack of competition. But if we don't start somewhere, then we're really up the creek. So if you're willing to make that kind of a commitment, then I think that that's a very strong message to send to these companies, these private ISPs. It's more important than ever to write our letters at this time, to make our phone calls, to send our emails, because the industry minister, Maxime Bernier, has yet to make up his mind about net neutrality. And there's a huge push from these large telecommunications companies in Canada. It's encouraging that really big content providers like Google, Yahoo, and Microsoft are dead set against scrapping net neutrality. They say that it would destroy the free and open nature of the internet. It would create a tiered dollar-driven internet that favors wealthier companies over basically everyone else. And this includes new groundbreaking startups. Now, internet companies argue that a fee helps them to ensure quality of service. But service to who and service for what? Like, what is this quality? I think we need to all ask ourselves, what does the internet mean to us? And in terms of quality of service, to me personally, that means free and open access at equal speeds to anything I want to look at on the net. As long as internet service providers stay out of that forum, the quality of service should be incredibly high. The internet has been critical, not just in terms of our global communication and our awareness of what's going on in the world. I mean, you could argue very validly that it's a cultural entity unto itself. It communicates so much at such a rate that we've never ever seen before. And in fact, in terms of academic research, the internet has proved critical in investigating network structure, how information travels, how hubs and nodes are established, hubs being these foci where everything comes back to the hub. And this is critical in terms of investigating and understanding things like communicable diseases, such as AIDS. And it also is critical in terms of understanding computer viruses and how these travel. The internet, as it is right now, unfettered, is an incredibly valuable resource for studying how humans communicate, for studying how networks arise, how information travels, in addition to just providing really cool stuff. And if net neutrality ceases to exist, then we have also lost this almost emergent property of a resource. It's like taming something wild, you know, to make a kind of cheesy analogy. So here's the deal. As motivation to write our MPs and telecommunications companies and ISPs to tell them how we feel about keeping the internet neutral in Canada, why don't you email me at myscienceprojectradio@yahoo.ca. In a future episode of My Science Project, what I'll do is I'll share all of the actions that we as listeners and me have taken to keep the net neutral in our country. If we all work together on this, we're not isolated, but we're a team working to keep the net neutral. Tell your friends, get your family involved. CC the CRTC on your email if you can, to let them know how you feel about it too, because they're the federal regulators of all this stuff. And let's work together to keep the internet in Canada neutral. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Julia. This has been My Science Project. Anne is on in another 2 weeks' time. Cheers, everyone.
I got high last night on LSD. My mind was beautiful and I was free. Warts love my nipples because they are pink. Vomit on me, baby, yeah, yeah, yeah. A blind man's penis is a wreck because he is blind. It's a wreck because he is blind. A blind man's penis is a wreck because he's blind. It's a wreck because he's blind. Let's make love under the stars and watch for UFOs. If little baby Martians come out of the UFOs, give up them, yeah. The zebra spilled his plastinia on Venus, and the gelatin fingers oozed electric marbles. Ramona's titties died in hell, and the Nazis want to kill